It's a big week when RHAP is on the road in Chicago. Check out my live show from Chicago. That's going to be up on Thursday, Wednesday night. Shannon Gus is going to be live with you with Kelly Wentworth after Survivor. And we preview the Dondi finale with Deal or No Deal Island host Joe Manganiello, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
So, Owen, why should people listen to this episode of Pod Friends featuring you?
You should listen to this episode of Pod Friends because I had a great time. I think any podcast where you enjoy speaking, where the interviewer, the host, asks great questions and helps you get that layer deeper is always interesting. And I think we touched on a lot, whether it's just general life advice or obviously some Survivor talk. But I really enjoyed our conversation, and I think you will as well. So keep listening.
Everyone, and welcome to Pod Friends. I'm your host, Matt Scott. That song was Pod Friends by the one and only Will from America. And this week, I don't have a long intro. I want to get right into the conversation for everyone tuning in to hear from the one, the only. You saw it from the title. You saw it from the intro clip. Owen Knight. And Owen is someone who I really love and admire. I especially think it's so cool that even before his time on Survivor, he was part of the Rob Is a Podcast community. And yet, despite being part of the community, despite being on Survivor, there are so many pieces of Owen's story that we're able to get into here more deeply than he was on Survivor, in his own words, unedited. And I'm really thrilled for you to hear this conversation, which, by the way, we recorded before the last season of Survivor. So this is a few months old. You might hear him reference season 45, and that's because season 45 was happening at the time that he recorded. I think he might mention that more directly, but just wanted to let you know. And also, this conversation with Owen gets me really excited for what's coming up next, not only on Pod Friends with a number of interviews. We have some in the can recorded in the last few weeks with the one and only Jacob Jones, with Franny Marin, but also that Survivor's coming up. And when Survivor season comes around, that means that there are live events happening. Events like the Rob Has a Podcast live shows, like Bryce and Wen Present, which are always just phenomenal occasions, and I'm excited for it. I hope you're excited for it, because of course I'm sure there are many Survivor fans listening to this one. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. Happy to be a fan with you. That I just want to make a few plugs, not only for past Pod Friends episodes featuring Survivors like Stephen Fishback, Marianne, Bryce Isaiah was the season premiere of this season, but also just to make a big plug for one other podcast I am on regularly each year, The Pride Has Spoken with Dr. Evie Jagoda and with Grace Leader. Check that out at robiswebsite.com/pridefeed. Subscribe, get the shirt. I always love to meet people at these live shows wearing The Pride Has Spoken shirts. It always just warms my heart so much. Also, just want to make a plug for a podcast I was recently on called You Thought You Knew, which is hosted by Kevin and Nigel. That is Kevin McLean and Nigel Bocanegra. And we had a great conversation about the one and only Yul Kwan. So check that out. Finally, maybe one more plug I could slot in here is for a podcast over on Silent Podcasts, hosted by the one and only Gia Worthy. It is called Slosh Survivor. It is just like the name sounds, having drinks, talking Survivor. I was on a couple of episodes one with MJC, one with Carla Cruz Godoy. So check those out too, Survivor fans. Okay, now let's get into the conversation with today's guest. Making his way to the podcast, hailing from New Orleans, Louisiana, the Big Easy, by way of Washington, D.C., he is a Survivor legend, a lover of the outdoors, a transracial adoptee, a former Orange Theory fitness coach, the one and only partner to the incredible Sammy. Please welcome the one, the only, the young friend to you and me, Owen Knight.
I will say, on the nervousness note, and probably every recording I have, like, I cut it out for the podcast, but on the nervousness note, for a long time, I was always like so nervous starting out the episodes, like, regardless of who it was. So I will say it's hot in here. So let me, like, get, let me just take this off, you know,
give the people what they want.
Give the people what they want. I have to leave this in, Owen. But
oh, let's go.
you're all over my shirt right now.
Excellent shirt.
And actually, it was kind of hot, so I'm glad that I didn't plan to wear the hoodie. Instead, going for the official merch.
There you go.
There we go.
The official, unofficial. I will say those t-shirts are so comfortable.
They're really
soft.
Oh my gosh. I will say, like, have you run into any or been anywhere in New Orleans otherwise where you have just like seen someone wearing this shirt? Because I think like there are the live shows and events, but
right.
The supermarket, the Orange Theory,
anything like that. Those were mostly just for friends and you know, people in the RHAP community. So I mostly personally know everyone who has one, but it blew my mind when I was in New York for the 44 finale and I saw a few shirts running around. It made me really happy, but I still have a couple. If anyone's interested, reach out.
Yeah, I feel like I was at maybe an event in Toronto a couple weeks before that. I'm bummed because I was in New Orleans instead of being in New York for that event. But I think it's Johnny who was wearing this shirt.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, like we're twins. It's awesome. But yeah, no, it's like awesome to be here with you wearing your shirt. Hopefully it's not weird at all to be like looking at yourself where in a way I should actually like pull this over my face.
Yeah, the microphone's blocking me. It's yes. Perfect actually. I get the colors, it feels comfortable, but I'm not staring myself in the face.
There we go. Yeah, it's not a distraction at all. But I'm thrilled that you could be here, Owen. Thrilled that we could have this conversation for Pod Friends. And I have there's so many places we could go. I'm gonna try something new with you, Owen. I'm gonna throw you into the deep end like I've never thrown anyone in this challenge. Oh my God, I'm thinking of the last gasp right now. speaking of the deep end and the water puns, but I've never asked a question that I ask every single person first, and I think you're a good person to ask this question of if your life, Owen, were a book or documentary, what would the title be and why? Let's see how this goes, people.
Gosh.
We threw Owen into the deep end.
Golly, starting with some marketing stuff.
I feel like I could throw it up and you'll knock it out of the park. I don't think it would be a Charlie Brown situation, you know.
I was ready to answer like remind people your hometown in. So if my movie was my life was a movie or a book, what would the title be?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. I mean, a lot of my friends after Survivor were saying Lovable Curmudgeon could be my autobiography title, since that was the title of the episode I named. But that's a little too on the nose. But it doesn't make for good podcasting if I'm just hemming and hawing for a long time. So
no, but it's fascinating to hear.
This is a tough question.
You're doing a great job.
I guess I'm going to try to talk through my thought process because, like, I mean, you want it to be about yourself and you want it to be about a facet of your personality, maybe something you've done. But I don't know. I feel like, just for the sake of a brief answer, I think Lovable Curmudgeon and then maybe a subtitle under it, like headline, Lovable Curmudgeon, subheading, like, you know,
yeah,
exploring eating and surviving. I don't know. We're working. It's a work in progress. The book is still being written, but a multi-title situation.
No, I think it's okay. Maybe who knows? We probably won't come back to that question. Who knows if we do? If a title does come to mind for you, let me know. It's a hard question, and I want to experiment with asking it up front just to get out of the way, because I always ask it at the end. But also, you know, it's probably a lot easier once you've been talking about your life to be like, oh yeah, here are the themes. I see the title. We figured it out. But I mean, I think it's fascinating that you went with Lovable Curmudgeon, because one of the first things I wanted to ask you about, Owen, and this comes from somebody who, I mean, I'm not bragging. I know it's kind of a big deal, but in the seventh grade, I was in A Good Man, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. So I'm just letting you know, like, shout out to St. Joseph's School in West Orange, New Jersey, which actually doesn't exist anymore, but whatever. That's how old we are. But yeah, like, what is your relationship with Charlie Brown? I feel like now you have this inextricably linked thing going on because of Survivor and the edit and everything else. But like, do you have do you have the books like behind you, keeping your computer up as you podcast? Like, I don't know what that.
No,
but I think it's really fascinating that Charlie Brown and you've been associated, because we'll get into it. But I see a lot of differences.
Yeah, we're forever linked for sure. But I'm not like a Peanuts connoisseur per se. Yeah. I didn't want to tell Peanuts this when they like reached out and offered to send me some stuff like.
Oh my gosh.
Sitting right here. Oh, my cat was all over this, but they sent me a cute backpack. I have this really cool Snoopy sweatshirt now. But you know, I read Peanuts as much as like any person our age, like in a newspaper, and it's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. I will say, I all the time, like a lot of my sense of humor is like quoting media and like memes and all that. But like all the time I say to my friends, like, I got a rock, like when I'm disappointed about something from like Charlie the Great Pumpkin. Yeah. I say that all the time. But no, I mean, it's not like I have a Snoopy tattoo or anything, but it just really, the imagery of Charlie Brown going to kick the football was strong. I think Spencer, it's been used to describe Spencer's game before, and it was very much in my head on the island. But now I'm Peanuts' biggest fan, obviously. But no, it's just it's funny that I, you know, it's going to be a thing for like ever now, especially in the context of Survivor.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting because like even just what I know about your background, like you, well, one of the things that's actually top of mind for me, and I'm assuming for you as we record this, it's like looking at you, like you're not missing the football. Like you're kicking the football. Like that's what it's about. You. But also you are like an athletic person. I say this as a athlete. I think that's the word that people use for sports. But no, like I'm also thinking of the fact that like I know that today, this, who cares about timeliness, but today, like these are your last Orange Theory classes.
Yeah. Yeah. The end of my coaching career. Yeah.
Yes.
It is funny.
I'm curious what that is. Cause like you outside of this is so much of a, I don't know. I just don't feel like Charlie, no offense to Peanuts. Now I'm going to get you canceled by Peanuts. but yeah, I'm curious like what, what that's like, because you are this person kicking the football. I know you played football also, but like what's the first, I guess there's a lot there. Maybe I should just stop talking and give you space to respond.
But no, that's really sweet of you to say. Like it's funny because because we're recording this right before 45 is starting, so seeing some of the newer players talk about themselves, it's naturally getting me to like be a little more introspective and thinking about how I spoke about myself a year and a half ago before I played, how I think about myself now. And hearing Austin actually talk about how he used to be unathletic and less, you know, happy with his appearance and less happy with his physical health and all of that, like that growth and how he's talked about how it's shaped him to be who he is today, like that, I can relate to that a lot because I appreciate you saying I'm kicking the football now. And I like to think I am in a lot of aspects of my life. Like I'm in a great relationship. I'm doing well at work. Mm-hmm. Like I've got this side hustle, coaching fitness classes, all this stuff, but I made it on my favorite show. Like my life is going great in a lot of ways, but like you mentioned, I played football in high school, but I like played like 10 snaps in high school. I accrued zero stats when I was in high school. I was not a great player. I was not the most athletic kid. Yeah, I was super shy growing up, little just like uncomfortable. Even still, like, I got to get the right amalgamation of beers in me to be comfortable on a dance floor. Like, you know, it's really like the social anxiety, the self-consciousness, that's always been a thing with me. But I think this journey over the past year and a half with the show and with the airing and everything, and getting to talk to more people and being more introspective and open about myself has been really good for me. So I appreciate you saying that. And I do feel like in a lot of ways, I've kind of like claimed that football kicking ability. And I feel like I've found things that I am good at, and I've honed my skills at work, like particularly like with public speaking. Like,
yeah,
even if like 5-6 years ago, you would ask me to do a podcast or like speak on a panel or do anything that I do at work or now for fun on my lunch break, like I would have said you were crazy for asking me. So yeah, it's, life is good, and I appreciate you saying that, but it has also been a journey for sure.
Yeah. I think it's so fascinating to just hear how like the experience went of, you know, being on Survivor and everything that sort of bubbles up around that, of course, whether it's, you know, fan community and being embraced by people who are supportive, or the edit, or just like a fan reaction, or not people online who say whatever they want to say is fascinating. And it's interesting that you mentioned a dance floor, because we could have totally talked about this before the fact that we logged on. But I think back to like being in New Orleans in January, and we were texting like, let's get together, da da da. Like, I was on a dance floor and like rolled my ankle to the point where right. I'm like texting you and like, oh, maybe we should get together. Oh, maybe I should rest my leg. So, but one of the things on my mind is like, I was even so curious of just like post Survivor, post, let's say the lights turning off a little bit as we get like a month after the season, or as we got a month after the season, like, were you already feeling some of those changes in your life? I'm curious where you were kind of, you know, right after, and how that contrasts with where you are now, with the fact that you've not only seen like a full season, but now this newer cast, and it's a little bit more removed, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah, no, good question. I mean, it's been interesting, because I think now that my season is now what, 9 months since 43 ended, and maybe even longer once folks are listening, like, I've enjoyed making more genuine connections with people that I met because of the show, like people like you, people like Mike Bloom, like some of these folks in the RHAP community that I got to meet because I was on Survivor and that I'd been listening to for years prior to being on the show. But now that like the like excitement of, oh, I'm a current contestant, like, I should be talking to these people, or I, you know, I'm going to see these people at these events, has turned into like, I want to talk to these people, I want to reach out. And it's something that's hard in my life. Like, even when the show was airing, like, I had some struggles in my personal life with some of my like college friends and work friends feeling like I wasn't giving them enough time. And that was challenging to feel like these are my real, like, everyone is my real friend, right? But like making sure that the people I knew before this monumental shift happened feel like I'm still invested in them and that I still care about them, while I'm still trying to foster these new relationships and then figure out what relationships from this show and this community are going to become like long lasting ones. And that's, I think, a headspace that I haven't heard a lot of reality people talk about, is that navigation of the post show like friendships. Cause like, you know, everyone jokes about like the cast group chat dying eventually and like people breaking off into their own pockets and things. But just a couple of weeks ago, I went and saw Cassidy. Sammy and I flew to Austin and stayed with Cass and hung out with her and her brother, and got to meet some of her friends. And just feeling like that like relationship we had built on the show and the friendship we had built on the show and watching ourselves on TV like months later still felt the same and felt normal and felt good. And like, that was really comforting in a way, to know that these bonds that were formed in this very atypical situation could last and be real. So that's made me excited going into 45, going into this now next event cycle and all of that. Yeah. Like feeling like I don't have to go to everything to try to like stay relevant, or like, ooh, I have to do this. I need to fly to all these places. But knowing that I can go and still have a good time and still feel like I'm genuinely connecting with people. So, by the way, you might have noticed, like, I'm pretty verbose, and I'll just like,
no, I love it. That's the whole point.
But no, it's been, thank you. But it's been cool. And like, yeah, when you were texting me, I remember now, like, you were being such a good sport. You're like, I can try to meet up. I was like, Matt, we're going to see each other at some point. Like, rest your ankle, dude. Like,
yeah,
that's one of those things, I think, because around our age where people, you know, when you go to someone's city and they'll like slide in your DMs and they'll be like, oh my God, you're here. And you're like, bro, if I wanted you to know I was here, I would have told you or whatever. Yeah. But then you feel this awkward pressure to like try to figure it out. So I thought it was very mature of us to both kind of just like take the L and be like,
oh, it was great.
Time. Like, I think we know what we need to do. And like, as much as we want to grab lunch or whatever, it's not in the cards this trip.
Well, that's the thing too. No, exactly. That's the thing too. And I think it's fascinating. Like I know that we're both, we're pretty newly 31. I turned 31 in May. Right. And, you're in the summer in July. Right?
Yeah. So yep.
It's like fascinating, those things that kind of occur to us. Actually, this makes me think about something with, you know, I didn't think that I would be talking so much about like Survivor and how it relates to that, but one thing I'm curious about, because I know that like in an alternate universe, one, we probably wouldn't have met because I hadn't been involved with this community until the class of 2020 and RHAP. Mm-hmm. And that's one conversation. But other alternate universe, when was the first time? Was it David versus Goliath? Or okay, so I don't even... You probably know what year that was.
That was, I went through casting in 2017. So I would have aired in 2018 if I had made that season.
And that would have been 23, 24 years old, right?
Yeah. 2017, like I was like 25, 26. 25, yeah.
25, 26. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, are you glad that you were able to, you know, go in now as the almost 30-year-olds versus... I am curious, like, what perspective shifts you sort of had between that time, just because it is weirdly, at least from personal experience, like a big difference to go in as 25-year-old, 26-year-old, maybe brain still developing now. But yeah, I'm just kind of fascinated with that, because Survivor is a really intense experience, right?
I'm very grateful that the Survivor gods made me wait. I think if I had gone through all of this back then, when I guess it would have filmed when I was about to turn 26, it would have aired right after I turned 26. And yeah, I don't know if I could have handled it. Just like, I was a lot less confident in myself. I was still you know, how I talked earlier about like how I've become a football kicker in certain aspects of my life. I think I was still on that journey then. And I certainly don't feel that I'm a fully formed person. You know, there's still elements of me that I think can improve and grow and change and, you know, becoming a more patient person or whatever. But like, me 5-6 years ago, it would have been a disaster. Like, you know, whether the negative aspects of my personality would have shown more on the show, whether I would have been able to handle criticism online the same way that I did now. And to be clear, I was very lucky that I got very little of that, but the bits I did, I saw them and they hurt, and you know, you process them. But doing that at 26, I think would have been an absolute disaster. And I think, you know, a lot of people talk about ages or whatever, like a lot of the discourse around Sammy on my season was like, oh, 20, he's saying he's 22 instead of 19. That doesn't mean anything. But I think people they just hear the number and it's like, oh, that's three digits apart. But you think about all that happens in that time frame, 19 to 22, you're finishing school, you're getting your first job, you're moving somewhere new potentially. And for us now that we've turned 30 and we're, you know, in this stage of life now, like our friends are having babies, like the wedding floodgates are fully open, like thinking about owning a home one day, thinking about like, is this my job or is this my career? Like there's a lot of these different milestones and different things happening that are scary for sure. Because, you know, for me, working in higher education, I think about college every day. And I feel like, you know, I have this like more, I don't want to say I'm looking backwards, but just like I think about college much more than people our age normally do.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's wild just to like feel like I've blinked and all of a sudden we're at this point. But yeah, in the context of the show, you know, I get some like Tulane kids asking me every now and then, or certain fans asking me, it's like, oh my God, I can't wait to apply. I'm like, wait till you're a little bit older. Like, especially the kids who are currently in college, I tell them to wait at least till they finish school, because it's a lot. It's a lot to go through.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, on that note, you know, one thing, because I'm really excited to get into like things outside of this Survivor experience. I'm sure that there are opportunities every single day for you to talk about that. But, you know, as we do start out this like newer season, season 45, I do wonder, just with your perspective, like, is there advice you have for newer players as they navigate just the experience, you know, regardless of if they're beloved or if they're just really taking it constantly from, from the fandom?
Yeah, I think Hai actually gave me a ton of great advice. And he always said, let it pass through you and all your feelings are valid. So in that, don't feel like you need to like shelter yourself from everything or ignore everything. Like, it is okay to see it and to feel your feelings, but let it be a fleeting moment and let that pain, that annoyance, that whatever, just pass through and you process it and you try to move on. Because ultimately, people online don't know what they're talking about. They didn't live the experience. They can try to be objective as they want, but a lot of time they're just like, there's some teenager out there just spouting off tweets into the stratosphere and they have no idea about the complexity of your situation. So my advice typically to people is to like take everything with a grain of salt. Don't feel like you need to like bubble boy yourself and insulate everything, but it can be helpful to have some people in your corner who can do the quick scan on the episode discussion on Reddit, or who can, you know, scroll through the hashtag and make sure you're not getting totally chewed out after an episode. But ultimately remembering that your feelings are valid and that your experience isn't over. I think that's something that I didn't realize, is that you're still processing the same experience when you're watching the show versus after you've played. And I think this is something the 44 folks were really grateful for, is they had more time to process the game before they went into the viewing experience. Whereas for 45 is about to, and what I did with 43 is like, you go right into it. You know, they've been home for what, 4 months probably since they finished filming, and they might think they're ready for this next chapter, but it's going to reopen some wounds, and that's okay. And give your castmates that grace and understand that they are on their own schedule with their processing and nothing's personal. And hopefully you can eventually talk it out and get into a good place. But yeah. The haters, they're going to talk, they're going to say whatever they're going to say, but they don't know what happened out there.
Going back, before we even just go more into your journey and background, like, something that I remember from last fall when when everything was airing, one was just the chance to meet you, but I didn't realize how many people from the cast I would meet and actually come to love and feel really connected with. Even just from the fan perspective or the removed perspective, like, hey, leave Owen alone. Like, leave people alone. Like, I remember getting in certain online things like, please, like, just be a good person. Don't be a jerk. But also, you know, it's a super intense thing. And I'm glad that you've received as much love as you did and as you have and as you continue to receive. Right.
Thank you. I'm one of the lucky ones for sure.
Yeah. But as we kind of like, you know, go into it, one of the big reasons that Pod Friends exists is to go beyond the narrative itself. I do think that newer era Survivor, I won't even say for better or for worse, because I think it's for better for sure, is, you know, an opportunity for a lot of people to have their stories told and different aspects of your story told. So I know that there are a ton of things that people think about when they think of your story in terms of like transracial adoption mm-hmm. and so much else. But Owen, and this might seem like a funny time to like get into it, but in your words, I'm curious, like who, this is kind of similar to my book or documentary question in terms of like the bigness of it, maybe, but I am curious, like in your words, who are you?
Yeah. Wow. Another big one. Okay. Who am I? That's a good question. I mean, I feel like I'm me, like I'm a pretty individual person. I think for me, I try to lead my life in a way that my parents would be proud of and that I am proud of, and that I don't try to pretend. Like something that I think I struggled with a lot is like, and I talked about this on the show a little, is like that idea of trying to fit in and trying to like be like everybody else, because I so wanted that when I was struggling with my identity and struggling with fitting in. Like I felt like the easiest thing would for me to just be like some basic white boy, basically. And that I felt like at the time that would have made my life easier. And now it's reached the point where I'm so much more comfortable in my own skin. Like I think some of the things about my personality that maybe are less than perfect, and like my, you know, my grumpiness or the sass or like some of the like just like ways I approach my day to day, even though like I know I could probably take the edge off a little bit, like I don't apologize for them, right? If that makes sense. Like, and I'm not trying to say like, oh, I'm unapologetically so quirky and weird and funny, but like just for me, I don't feel like I'd be being myself if I like wasn't at least a little bit of a dry jerk on the rarest occasion, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't think anything I do is ever like malicious or mean or whatever. And this is now, I'm totally spitballing here, but this is now going down a weird tangent, but I'm just saying like, I appreciate, and I'm so happy that now I feel like I can just fully be who I feel like I am, and just like have people in my life who see me for me and know where my like heart is and where my intentions are. And like, I feel like the show, not to bring everything back to the show, but I feel like I'm fortunate in that my edit on Survivor captured who I am very, very well. Yeah. And that people saw that I'm funny and I'm earnest and that I'm like genuinely like caring, and there's a lot of warmth here. But that just sometimes I'm a little grumpy, and that is what it is. But, yeah, that question can go in so many different directions. I hope I got there.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating, because one thing that I feel like I've heard, not even just in this conversation, but otherwise from you, is like this, I don't know if I would call it, because you did use the phrase unapologetic, so I wouldn't even call it an apology for, in your words, being like a lovable curmudgeon or lovable jerk. But one thing that I always kind of appreciated even about that is just the realness of it. Like so mm-hmm. often people put on a facade. So often people mm-hmm. feel the need to like to show up a certain way and just not be real about our emotions. And I think I mean, there's so many aspects of that. But, you know, I think of, and I know that this is an experience that you could relate to, of course, but like being the only one in the room sometimes, like I mm-hmm. often talk about it and name it. I always like think of Bryce Isaiah for this as being mm-hmm. someone who talks about being like a Black queer man. And I mm-hmm. often go into spaces where I'm like, as a young Black queer man, just to like bring it in. But like you feel the need to shrink yourself down sometimes for the purposes of other people's comfort and how other people are feeling and doing. And I'm so curious to, I will say as a spoiler, a couple months ago, I listened to a podcast, which I want to call, I'm going to say it's Adoptee Voyages. Maybe.
Yes.
I listened to you on the Adoptee Voyages podcast, like talking about your journey, just more in depth from that perspective, obviously, because That focus on transracial adoption was very much front and center. But I am curious, like, what, I mean, even just to hear in your words as we talk about it now, like, what has that journey been, getting comfortable with yourself, or even just like finding your identity from growing up as a DMV, DC, Maryland, Virginia, kid back in the day?
Yeah. Well, first of all, just to go back to what you were saying, you encapsulated what I was trying to say so well. So thank you for picking up what I was putting down. And also thank you for clarifying that we're talking about DC, Maryland, Virginia, and not the Department of Motor Vehicles.
I mean, if that's, if you're into that, no judgment.
Yeah. No, I say it all the time. But thank you for listening to that podcast. Yeah, I think so identity, race, myself, like, I don't know. It's one of those things that I struggled to try to like wrap my head around for a long time, just because I wasn't really in spaces or around a lot of people who had that kind of shared identity. And for a long time, I felt like embarrassed is the first word that comes up, you know, is there's multiple layers to it where it's like, I'm embarrassed of being different. And then that morphs into like, I'm embarrassed that I'm not doing more to try to learn more about who I am. And then I'm embarrassed that I don't have a lot of other Asian people around me that I can talk to about this. And then you feel like you've tried then too hard to assimilate. And now you're like being a bad representation of who you are. And then it just gets very confusing. And so just the fact that it got brought up on the show, and what I felt was a very tactful, relevant, like, way that in the narrative of my game, it made sense. And like, the messages that I got, like, were so touching, just from other transracial adoptees, like the kids around our age or even younger, or from parents, you know, who have adopted children from whether it's Korea or elsewhere, like, just hearing from all these other people. And sorry if you hear the construction, but it was really, really special just to hear that I'm not alone. And in like, it was almost like they played an Uno reverse card on me, because so many of these kids were saying, like, seeing you on Survivor made me feel like I'm not alone. Wow, and I'm like, seeing like 15 messages from you makes me realize I am not alone. And it's been a really fun experience for me, just hearing and connecting with people who I share that with. But now, like, me trying to take it a step further, and now contemplating maybe going to Korea, maybe doing a trip with my mom, maybe wanting to try to find and make contact with my birth parents just to be like, hey, I'm alive. There's a lot swirling around in my head now. And like I talked about with Jesse and Carla on the show, just like trying to be more in touch with my Asian culture and Korean culture, and have more of an appreciation for the food and the language, and like, just trying to, you know, I guess, be a good steward of that part of my identity, if that makes sense. And so it's still a process. It's still a journey. And if you are a transracial adoptee and you want to talk about it, hit me up, because just the more people I talk to, the more comfortable I am talking about it and like feeling connected to that part of me that I kind of ignored for so long.
Yeah, I think that that's all really powerful. And the piece that, one piece of that I relate to so much is even just getting comfortable with, well, there are a lot of dynamics that you just point to, but like getting comfortable claiming a thing or feeling like you are that thing. So, I mean, I'll say growing up, going to like so many schools, even college at a primarily white institution, working in primarily white spaces, you know, something that I'm personally really thankful for now is being like, no, this is what being my identity is. Like, this is what it is. It might not be how it looks for this person or that person or that person. And there are always people who could connect and relate, which I think is the power of like talking about these things and sharing it. Sharing our stories. But yeah, I feel you so deeply with that. And I'm like really thankful that to bring it back to Survivor, which like, I think it makes sense that it's such a huge part of your journey, as much of a fan as you have been, and as you are. But you know, to bring it back to that, like, it is really this amazing thing that you could look back at it and say, oh, they managed to actually like tell my story. You managed to tell your story really effectively, but then other people were really able to see that and understand it and wrap their head around that and take it and share it with like millions of people.
Millions of people.
And so many more to come, right? Who will, I'm sure, tweet you about it as if it's happening live for the next several decades. Let's hope.
Let's hope. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it is. But it's kind of mind blowing. It really is. But I'm grateful. I'm grateful for that. Absolutely. Because like I said, I don't, it's not something I talk about on the daily necessarily, but getting to have that introspective moment in that context and like feel like the show did that for me at the very least. Like that was one of those things that's like, regardless of the outcome, the fact that I got to have that conversation and that got to air, like that's worth $1 million right there.
There we go. That, yeah. And I love that you just said that too, because something that I've come to find, and I, you know, I'm sure that, I mean, and this is from my perspective as a viewer, as a fan, but I think that there are so many ways to win it doesn't just mean winning the $1 million minus taxes, you know, if that softens that.
After but, Obama takes it. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thanks, Obama. I wish it was Obama taking my taxes these days. But anyway, yeah, no, but I also just think that something else that jumps out to me from actually, it was in listening back the last few days to the Adoptee Voyages podcast that you, something you said that jumped out to me, which is about like the weight that we carry, or in reference to the weight that you carry representing an identity at times. And so often, actually, like a ton in the last week, especially because with work, I often talk about my identity and, you know, the weights of that in certain spaces. But one thing I really appreciated from you, which I guess I haven't been thinking about as much like in the last week, in the last few days, is carrying weight as an honor and not just as, you know, barriers or other things that come up. But I'm curious for you, like what are there aspects, and I don't just mean with Survivor, but I mean anywhere you show up where you are representing your identities, like is there, I'm curious what that looks like for there to be weight where it's like, okay, this thing is kind of dragging, slowing you down. And then what does that look like when it is an honor, when it is something that could be a superpower for you?
I love this question. It's interesting because for me, working in higher education, doing college admissions, my personal identity gets tangled up in my professional identity sometimes as well. So like my brain is kind of going into two directions with this question because like, my job, for those who don't remember, like I do college admissions. So a big part of that is representing your institution to as an outward facing person. So like I'm about to go to Los Angeles for 2 weeks. I'm about to go to Virginia and North Carolina for a week and talk about my school, Tulane, here in New Orleans, and talk to parents, talk to high schoolers, talk to people who work at high schools. And I am the ambassador for the school. And so part of the reason like my Twitter handle is different is because with the following I got from Survivor, there was more of a microscope on me. And when I would tweet certain things about the Supreme Court or things going on in the world, the powers that be would sometimes get a little, dicey, because to their credit, they were 100% right. Because I had our institution's name in my handle, a lot of people can interpret that as being like an official statement from the university or whatever, which would be quite a logical jump. But anyway, I changed it because that weight, that pressure, that like that responsibility of feeling like I was representing my workplace, even when I was like on Twitter at 2 a.m. after watching an episode of Survivor, like, you know, that was cumbersome at times. So I'm really glad that I can be a little more free of that in my personal life, because, you know, watching Big Brother or watching this, or like, you know, I don't feel like I need to wave my work flag and have my admissions name tag on at all times. But and it, when it comes to my personality or my personal identity, that's something like I think I've talked with some friends about this, and a few of my like close family friends are like half Asian. And so we've had this similar thing growing up in a predominantly white town and school where it was a little like easier for them and for me, since I don't have a like traditionally Asian name, to like mask that part of our identity or whatever. But my one friend, Sarah, in particular, I think we had talked recently because she got a shirt that's like proud to be Asian or something to that effect. And it made me realize that for a long time, I really wasn't. And that brings up this whole distressing, like, oh God, I'm a horrible person for not, you know, owning that. But, you know, I think for me now, I try to carry myself in a way, and when I walk into a new space or whatever, where I have a greater understanding that that is what people see, or that is what people are coming to expect. And I often now go in it with the place of like any negativity they might think or any assumptions they might have, I want them to like feel bad for thinking that. And I'm not coming in like necessarily hostile or anything, but it's like I appreciate the opportunity to prove people wrong. Whether that is about me, whether that's in the context of work or on the show or whatever, like I think subverting expectations is something I enjoy doing. It's kind of a double-edged sword, but it's fun, and it's made me, I think, a more thoughtful person in that respect. And also then trying to be more empathetic when I see someone in a space where they might feel like they're the only one in that space and they might feel uncomfortable. I want to be able to see those people more. And I think my fiance, Sammy's very good at that. She's a career coach at Tulane, and she used to do admissions. And, you know, she comes from a first generation college background, a lower income background. And something she prides herself on is seeing those kids in spaces at our expensive PWI school we work at. And I'm trying to be more like her in that respect.
Well, I mean, look, I appreciate you sharing so much of this too, but you mentioned Sammy, and I feel like I want to give you the space to talk about Sammy, because like she is always such a, like, one thing I feel like I have seen just a bit is how much of a bright light she is. And then I also feel like I see that through like survivors and people in the community. There was one post or something on social media that I remember jumping out to me from Carolyn from this past season. Just went on and on about how great Sammy is as this protector and like my bodyguard, or whatever phrasing that she used. But I don't know. I'm just, how are you so nice and kind? And like, I'll be in New Orleans for the RHAP live show later this fall. And just the ways that, you know, but also that she can be so like, oh my gosh, like, glad you're coming, gonna be here, all these things.
No, she makes me less of a curmudgeon for sure. She's amazing. I mean, I appreciate you bringing all that up. Like, it's really, I feel very grateful that we've gotten to share this experience together, and that people have gotten to know her for her, and not just as my plus one, or not just as like, oh, Owen's fiance. Like, we joke that she's more popular amongst the people in this space.
I mean,
than
no,
I am.
No offense, Owen, but
none taken. At all. It's true. Like Bryce always says it. Like, Carolyn did that whole post about her, and I think it goes to the point that I was just talking about, is that like she sees people where they are, and she has this nature about her that is so empathetic and caring, and just like she can anticipate people's needs much better than I can. And, you know, and it's funny because she is outwardly friendly, but she's not as like, she'll wait and she observes and she like sees things, and then she knows where to go where people need that. And she can see when someone's partner is uncomfortable at a giant survivor party, or she can see when Carolyn is getting mobbed and just needs a glass of water. And like, she just has this, I want to say respect for people, but also this like this awareness that I think is really amazing. But just her warmth. And I mean, I'm so lucky that I got to go on this journey with her. And I feel so bad, Matt, just because the timing of our engagement and trying to plan a wedding could not have been worse. Like, I had no idea how much Survivor would take over my life. Not in the fall. I knew it would be busy in the fall. But the following spring for 44, I had no idea how much we'd be traveling and going to parties and shows and this and that. And like, we're on the cusp of signing some paperwork for next fall for our wedding. Mm-hmm. So that's really exciting. But I do feel a little bad that Survivor has kind of derailed some of the milestones in our relationship. Yeah. But I think she's made the most of it and has really become part of the reality family and the RHAP family too. And it's makes me happy that she's got her space here as well.
Yeah, no. And I mean, it's I think one thing I really appreciate just about her, very, very different than you sharing what you appreciate about Tammy. But one thing I appreciate is, you know, I often feel so at these events, like so. Protective is not the right word, but just like, you know, like give people their space. You don't want to. And then also like the fact that I referenced this or alluded to this a bit earlier, but I'm sure oftentimes it's like, let's talk about this thing that happened in the episode. Let's talk about Survivor constantly. And you're this fully formed human. And it's just nice to, you know, hear from you with what you're saying, that example for seeing that in people. And I don't know, like it's cool to have that avenue to be so much closer to survive. I should say to cut down the distance between, you know, Survivor and being on the show and then the fan community, which is one thing I appreciate about this RHAP community or Bryce and Wen Presents or, you know, name whatever community it is, especially in this like post diversity initiative world where like I think for someone like me, for example, or even for you, could imagine, you know, some of these characters really and people really meaning a lot as we see them on the show. But it's like cool to have people see people being supported, treated like humans. So I love that we could have that. To pivot a little bit, because we did mention the live show for RHAP coming up this fall. I love New Orleans. I know that you, I'm sure, love New Orleans even. I hope I love New Orleans even more. but I'm curious, because people, there'll be a number of people who are like coming into town, experiencing it. But I kind of have a two-prong question. One, like, what's it like for you now to welcome RHAP really back to New Orleans? Because I vaguely remember like an RHAP New Orleans event many moons ago. I don't know, you would know better than I do, but more than anything, I'm just curious if you have like New Orleans recommendations. It is the middle of the week, so I know that New Orleans should be called the city that never sleeps, so
it's good. It would be a good title if it wasn't already taken.
Right.
I don't know if they've ever come to New Orleans. I know Rob and I had joked about it way back when I became a patron. And he told me the story how he visited for Mardi Gras. He drove down from New York when he was in college. But New Orleans gets a bad rap sometimes. And I know like New Orleanians kind of sound goofy when that's one of the first things we say about the city. But I think so many folks' perception of New Orleans is only based off of like Bourbon Street or Mardi Gras or like, you know, their uncle's experience there in 1985 that he barely remembers. Like, you know, a lot of people don't realize like how beautiful the city is, like how many trees there are and the streetcar and the parks and the world-class food. Oh my gosh. But in the context of the event coming up, December 6th and the 5th, I believe Bryce and Wendell are going to do a welcome party. But it seems like most people are going to be staying in the Central Business District, the CBD. So that's going to be really nice because we can walk to a lot of good restaurants and bars and places to hang out. It's close enough to Bourbon that if you did want to go experience that with a group of people, you could safely walk there as a group and then either get a ride back or walked back together as a group. But then you're also close enough to like the streetcar or a cheap Uber ride to explore more of the city. The World War II Museum, if you're into that, that's a beautiful place to go. But food wise, oh my goodness, making some reservations like Cochon, any of Donald Link's restaurants, those are some of my favorites. Yeah, Donald Link. He's got Koshan. He's got Gianna for Italian. Herb Saint, which is a bit more upscale. Let's see. Po' Boy Places. Killer Po' Boys in the Quarter is good. I could go on. This could be 4 hours of the podcast. But like, just there's so
with some records. So yeah, let's keep going things for the next several hours.
Yeah. But just general tips wise, I mean, I think wear comfortable shoes. Yeah. Wear bring like comfy clothes. Like the thing with New Orleans is no one cares what you're dressed like. I could wear this into a nice restaurant. Like you can just wear anything. I'm wearing a tie-dye t-shirt for those just listening, but like
you're all good.
It's very chill place. You can walk around with a beverage in your hand if you're into that sort of thing. So if you go into a bar and you're not feeling it, you can still get a drink to go and walk to the next place and figure it out. But I'm very excited. I was just Googling. I don't know if Instagram still does like the guides feature, but I was thinking of putting together some of my favorite places in some sort of medium as we get ready for that December trip. But Audubon Park, Tulane's campus, both very beautiful if you wanted to get out of the hubbub. Cafe Du Monde, the beignets and coffee there, they're famous for a reason. And then if you wanted like a cheaper, like casual lunch in the Quarter, I always say Felix's for oysters and like gumbo and po' boys, because the Acme Oyster House across the street always has a ridiculous line. But message me if you need more ideas. But I'm very excited. And I think New Orleans, like, you know, some people might be a little hesitant to come. You know, they hear about the crime in New Orleans or, you know, whatever. But the thing with New Orleans is like, it's just like any other city in America. There's parts you are less comfortable going into after 10 p.m. There's parts that you're more comfortable going to. And when it comes to like the murder, the violent crime, that stuff, much like it happens in any other city, is happening amongst people that know each other, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like random pedestrians are getting just like killed for no reason. Just have your wits about you. You know, one of my friends recently got pickpocketed, but that was at 4 a.m. after a wedding when he decided to run away from all of us by himself and just duck into some random bar and hang out there by himself. Like, no matter where in America you do that, that's not a smart thing to do. So just be aware, keep your wits about you. And one local tip I'll give you is if anyone downtown asks you like, "Hey man, I bet I know where you got them shoes." That is a street hustle where you say what? And they're like, "Yeah, I bet I know where you got those shoes. I bet you $5. And you're like, "Okay." And then they say, "You got them on your feet." And then their larger friend comes out and you have to give them $5. So if anyone says, "I bet I know where you got them shoes," just say, "On my feet," and keep walking. That's the most likely the only thing that's going to happen to you when you're here.
Good to know. Yeah, I feel like my like even just living in Washington, D.C., but growing up in the New York City area, just outside of New York in North Jersey, like one of my tips is just like, you got to keep moving, like, you know, and it's, you want to be friendly and all and stop. And, you know, and sometimes you could read the situation. You're like, let me do that. But also it's like, you got to go. You got to have places to be, things to do. My shoes are on my feet. And they got to keep going.
Keep it moving.
Yes. But no, it's cool. And I feel like, you know, you mentioned putting a guide together, but even like this was a little bit of a guide for folks. So hopefully they're able to like rewind, like go back, like take it in, you know, all of that stuff. But I think the cool thing about all of this, it kind of leads me back to this idea of community, because you've been part of this RHAP community for so long, but Owen, I don't know if I know the story of how you discovered the RHAP community. Your relationship has evolved with it a bit, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if that story is out there.
Great question. I don't know if even I remember. So the origin or the re-origin story for me becoming a Survivor fan again is that I was on a Southwest flight the premiere night of Millennials versus Gen X. And so on Southwest, you have free live TV. And so I was like, "Oh, Survivor's on. I guess I'll watch that." I haven't watched Survivor in like 10 years. And I was immediately hooked. And just thinking back to that point, that would have been 2016, I believe. I'm just double checking my dates there.
I'll take your word. But
over the course of that, like 9 months, I ended up watching like 20 seasons of Survivor, something like that. Wow. I went back and then I think I ended up watching all 32 because I had left off after Fiji. I like went back and reverse engineered when I had stopped watching. So Survivor China was the first one I went back and started binging. So I was concurrently binging from China onwards while Millennials versus Gen X was airing. And I think I like caught up by the time it got to December when Millennials Gen X wrapped up. And so I got into RHAP, I think sometime during Millennials versus Gen X. I definitely remember it for Game Changers and for Triple H. Triple H was when I was like deep into it and I was listening to The Wand Off and First One Out and like, you know, fully in my like super duper fan. Like if Rob ever liked any of one of my tweets, I'd be like, oh my God, he saw what I said. Like it was truly like an obsession. But RHAP for me, I really enjoyed it because I had no other friends to talk to about this newfound obsession of mine. Like, you know, Survivor is strange because being a fan, it's not like a football team or a band where you wear a t-shirt or you go to a thing. Well, at least I wasn't aware that you could go to a Survivor thing. But like, it's not like on the street you could spot another Survivor fan and be like, yo, Amanda Kimmel, you love her too. Like, you know, it's just not the same as other
That's happened
fandoms.
To me before too.
Exactly. Yeah. Say, hey, you look like you appreciate Amanda Kimmel. Like, just not a thing. And so I needed to find a place where I could like discuss all these things swirling around my head. And this so finding the subreddit is where I started. Which is, I have a complicated relationship with the Survivor sub, but
fair enough.
You know, it's love and hate. But
it's Reddit. Yeah,
it's Reddit. That's the way she goes. But I love Rob's tagline of like fun, smart reality TV podcast, because I think RHAP is such a fun mix of insightful strategy discussions and the access and the perspective you get from having so many players involved in the production and being on episodes, but it's also doesn't take itself too seriously, which I appreciate. You know, it's not trying to be like this only strategy focus X's and O's, like we must discuss the most perfect way to do everything, but it's goofy and starting to like catch up with the inside jokes and like, you know, getting sucking kneecaps in my daily vernacular. You know, it's just like when I was saying, it's just, I felt like I was becoming a part of something. And then it's funny, earlier you mentioned the class of 2020. I've already given Sam Moore shit for this, but I applied for the class of 2020. And in hindsight, I see why I wasn't called. I did my video about Top Chef All Stars, relating Melissa King to Kelly Wentworth. And I tried drawing a parallel between them. And it was fine. But I just felt like it would be fun to be a part of. And now I feel really honored that I get asked to do podcasts and I'm a part of the family now. It's great. But I recommend it to anyone who's especially like newer fans. I'm like, yo, this is going to be your first season live. You got to get on RHAP. You got to watch. Like, and it's fun to see that different people have different favorite shows as well. It's like some people really love the know-it-alls, but some people really love the feedback feedback. Yeah, I started combining the word in my head, but it's just cool. It's like, so there's something for everybody.
Look at that. It's a great ad for RHAP, but also I think it really speaks to the importance of having this community. Like for me, the very first time I met Survivor fans in person and spoke about Survivor was doing like the one and only live reality game I did, Survivor Philly, where I was like, oh my gosh, there are a bunch of Survivor fans who are really into this. And then it was cool to go to Bryson Went Presents, and then the RHAP live shows came back really, you know, just after definitely shutting down with the pandemic and all. And so it's awesome to be able to talk with people about this, to bond with people about this stuff. I want to ask you though, Owen, and because look, I learned not to ask the question like, oh, is there anyone you want to shout out? Because then people run out of people. And you've even shouted out some people, High and Cassidy being a couple of folks. But I'm very curious, you know, a lot of people want to meet you through these events, through these this community and get to know you. But is there anyone from Survivor to date who you haven't met who you're like, oh, my God, I will have such I will just be at a loss for words in meeting this person, my hero. I'm curious if there are people like that for you.
There are a few. So fortunately, I've gotten to meet a couple of them in Suri, which Wendell actually captured and like has a video of me just being like, hi, Suri. Like, I was crazy. And then Ozzy, I didn't realize what a strong reaction I would have. I didn't realize I would feel that way until I saw him across the room. And I was just like, oh my God. Cause like Ozzy, you know, when I think I was like 10 or 12, something like that, Ozzy's first season, whatever age you were. But like, yeah, I was just like, he's so cool. Like, so now people I haven't met yet, I would love to meet Penner. Penner is pretty high on my list. I'm trying to think who else. Parv, I think I would probably get tongue-tied speaking with Parv. Malcolm, love me some Malcolm. And then I'm trying to think who else. I have like not a dream necessarily, but like I would just love if I randomly bumped into James Clement somewhere here in Louisiana. Like if I'm just like at a gas station or like walking around Bourbon Street and I'm just like, James, like, what are you doing here? Like,
in a graveyard, you know, you never know.
In a graveyard on one of my nightly walks. Funny quick story about James. I recently saw one of my buddies from Tulane who's from New Iberia, Louisiana, near Lafayette. For those unfamiliar, so James is from that part of the state, Cajun country, as people say. Mm-hmm. He played football at the University of Louisiana, Lafayette. And my friend TJ, his name is Timothy James LeBlanc, L-E-B-L-A-N-C. And he pronounces it that way, you know, with like the French. And he made me realize, and he explained to me that James Clement probably is James Clément, is how he probably says his name.
What?
And I need to like go back and watch and figure this out. But like, that's how people from that part of Louisiana would say his last name. And it's not like breaking news necessarily, but to me, I just think it changes a lot. I think it's really cool. So, yeah.
I think sometimes I think at some point, especially with how much he was on Survivor, like I could just imagine, you know, you're like, oh, it's not worth correcting people. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
So, who knows?
Yeah.
But breaking news and for a non-Cajun, non-Louisianan, and breaking news for sure.
Breaking news, but James Clément. But yeah, those are some of the folks on my list. I'm not to make this sad, but I had a similar thing of like, I would have loved to like bump into Keith Nail at some point. I know people have spotted Wes on Bourbon a time or two, or Keith at an LSU game. So RIP Keith, but yeah, those are my short list. And seeing Chaos Cass is teaching a class on Survivor. I would love to take that class at, she's at Texas Tech. That would be really
cool. Gosh. Look, I know I love like the, I just love like seeing like the fandom and the nerding out and all of that for this thing, because like so often when we see shows or whatever it might be, you know, there's a distance. Like it's not cool to be a fan at times. It's not cool to nerd out. I feel like things are changing, especially in the Survivor context. Like Survivor now, I mean, maybe more than ever, like leans into that, like people and their fandom and the history and all that, which I think is really cool. But I mean, now I'm going to be watching out. I'm like, if James walks in at any point, if I'm in a room with you, I'm just I'm going to pull out my phone and start recording for the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Up,
and then also ask him the proper way to pronounce his.
Yes, we got to get to the bottom of that. But yeah, it blows my mind whenever anyone's excited to meet me. Like it's so flattering. Like at this wedding this past weekend, there were a couple people who were like, oh my God, like I loved watching it. And just like the fact that anyone has that kind of reaction to me is, that's one of the things I still struggle to wrap my head around, honestly.
Yeah.
It's really flattering, really humbling. And really cool. And I appreciate it when people do it. It makes me feel good, obviously. But I, like you were saying, I appreciate that the Survivor fandom is one where it's cool to be excited about it. And it's like, you know, we can be unapologetically just like geeking out about this stuff. It's great.
Yeah, I love it. And it's, I almost feel like I want to come back around to this question that I asked you at the beginning. You gave us the lovable curmudgeon at the beginning with your book or documentary title, Owen, but I want to give you a chance. You know, I don't know if there's a different title or something that comes to mind, but if, you know, now that we've had this conversation, we've sorted through so much, you know, history, trauma, opportunity, joy, all the things. I'm curious if there's another, I don't know if it's the sequel to The Lovable Curmudgeon, but another book or documentary title that sort of encapsulates you.
I think,
and
something
who you are.
I'm glad we revisited this. And I think something that comes to mind is excited to be here. Just thinking about not only just Survivor, but times in my life where I'm excitable. Like if I care about something, if I'm excited about something, I'm gonna let you know about it. Like I remember even when I was pledging my stupid fraternity, I would annoy my friend who was a sophomore because I'd ask him so many questions about like, how does the rush committee work? Are we going to do this? What are we going to do for the party? Like, and I'm just like, when I'm on to something, like I'm fully invested into it. And I think excited to be here rolls off the tongue pretty nicely, more so than lovable curmudgeon does. Excited to be here is the primary. And then it's like, how a curmudgeon can learn to love so much. I don't know. Working on it. Still a work in progress. But yeah.
Look, I like that. Look, it, you know what? I think I look at as we kind of start to wrap up here, like I look at I appreciate the lovable part, but the curmudgeon part, you know, we could use a rebrand. You deserve a rebrand because at the end of the day, it's just the, there's a lot of, I think what our world needs, not to get too big here, but I think more of what our world needs is people who are able to say like, this is how I feel about a thing. This is how I don't feel about a thing. And just feeling comfortable, like, I don't know, I don't want to overuse the term boundaries or anything like that, but just like be real and show up as you are.
Right.
And that also seems like it's a lesson from a lot of your just what we've talked about here. So, Owen, is there, I don't know if there's anything else you want to talk about or share here in particular before we kind of get to maybe my last question.
Yeah, no, we've touched on a lot, and I apologize if anyone was looking forward to a less Survivor focused conversation. But for me, it's been such a
I don't think
vehicle.
They were.
No, that's good. For me, it's been such a vehicle for self discovery, and I've never phrased it that way before. But no matter how much time passes, it's always going to be a part of my life because I think it also happened to me right at this important juncture, right as I was turning 30. Right as I was getting engaged, right as like this next chapter of my life was naturally happening. And it just so happened that this crazy variable got introduced right at that time as well. But no, I promise I don't just talk about Survivor all day, every day. I mean, I love my fitness career and journey. I love sports. I love TV and movies. Like I always enjoy talking with people about this. If anyone plays Apex Legends, I am hooked on that game currently. But yeah, there's a lot here, but I'm just so grateful for the experience that I had that has helped me become this next, like, I think better version of myself. And Survivor's going to be entangled in that, of course. But yeah, it's been fun. I can't believe we've already been talking this long. It's flown
by.
I
can't either. I have like one other question before my last question that popped up, because you referenced it, you know, your fitness journey, Coach Owen, Coach, is it Coach Owen, Coach Knight,
Coach okay? Owen, like, Coach Owen, okay. First name. Yeah.
All there I we need. Go. There. I feel like there's definitely another coach. The name Phil Knight jumps out to me for some reason.
Yeah.
Basketball probably. Mm-hmm. Yes. There we go. There's definitely you know what, now that I mention it, I should definitely probably know that name. But anyway, I want to ask you mentioned your fitness journey. Like, I'm sure this could be its own podcast and conversation, but I live right down the street from an Orange Theory. I haven't gone into it. I go to a different gym, but I want to ask, like, are there tips that you have for people who are just getting started on that journey? Because I know so many people, Survivor fans, who might have that. And again, we're talking about Survivor because I think it's super relevant here, where it's like people who might have a perception like, OK, strategically, I could go in. But I'm even someone who said to myself, like, oh, my gosh, like, you know, I'm going to need like I'm going to be like Marianne and everyone, like Jonathan's going to need to come save me and rescue me out there. But any tips you have just for people who are getting started, or maybe another way to ask that, like, are there tips that you give to your pupils as they get started and into a more fitness oriented lifestyle?
Yeah. Well, and I'm excited. This is a topical question because I'm about to kind of like restart my own fitness journey because I am retiring as a coach. Just my schedule is just getting too crazy, but now I'm going to have more time to work out for myself. And now it's, am I going to do Orange Theory? Am I going to try a different gym? Am I going to just swim at the pool? But regardless of what you do, I think with fitness, I think so many people, especially like in the age of all these influencers and so much content going on and feeling like you need to get the latest and greatest workout set and do this and blah, blah, blah. Like there's no one size fits all thing for your fitness, right? It's all about what you enjoy doing just to get your body moving. And it's also not an immediate, like, I need to go from sitting on the couch like Suri to running a 6 minute mile. That's not going to happen overnight. It's called a journey for a reason. And even if that just means you walk around the block twice a week, if you go on a long walk on Saturday morning when you go to get your groceries or whatever, like it doesn't have to be this grandiose, insane, like, oh my God, I'm going to get a cycle bar membership and go five times a week right now. Like you can work your way there. And I think something that I had fears about when I first joined Orange Theory, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate, I was afraid that other people were going to be looking at me. And that's a big fear I have just generally, as we've discussed, like the self-conscious, like, oh my God, don't look over here. Like I was really petrified of going to a gym, especially with some of these ones where your heart rate is up on the wall and people can see, oh, Owen's struggling. Like I promise you at my studio and a lot of these places, whether it's Orange Theory or not, people do not care. People keep their eyes on their own paper. You are going to feel much more self-conscious than is the reality. And whether that is even at like a Planet Fitness, if you're lifting weights, like the people understand and have been there before. And even if you're not happy with your current fitness level, and if you're really, really hesitant to go, either going with a friend or just trying to remind yourself and fighting that urge to be scared, like knowing that people respect that what you're doing, that is going to be 99% of the people are going to say, like, look at that, like, good for them. Like they're here, they're trying. And like, I feel that way when I see anyone running down the street here in New Orleans in the 95% humidity. I'm too scared to do that. But find what you enjoy. There's no one size fits all answer. And just understand that you are your toughest critic, and most 99% of people are going to be really supportive. So good luck.
Yeah. I love that advice, or really that closing advice too, just summing everything up, because it's applicable to fitness, but it's also applicable to life and just like doing your thing, being who you are, a big theme in this conversation. Owen, we could be here for so much longer, probably like diving into everything we've talked about more deeply, going elsewhere. But I want to know, like, any words for the listeners and folks who are tuning in now?
To close us out, I should say.
Yeah. Yes. You get the final words.
No, just final words are just thank you for listening. Thank you for letting me be a part of all of this. Thank you, Matt, for having me on and discussing. And like I've said, like Survivor is one of my favorite things in the whole world, and just getting to be a part of it at all has been so fun. And that it's a gift that keeps on giving is I'm just really grateful for it. But never hesitate to reach out if you're a listener and you want to talk about your fitness journey, Survivor, anything in between. I am always happy to connect with people, because I am one of you. Like, that's the thing, is like, I'm a super fan who just happened to get on the show. And that's made me realize all these other past players too, they're normal people too. So fire off those DMs, y'all. Like, it's okay. Like, we're just excited to be here, as I said.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Pod Friends featuring Owen. Appreciate Owen so much. And it's so great to have this conversation, have this time to connect. That's what Pod Friends is all about. And I hope that you're subscribed at robinswebsite.com/podfriends. Feed or wherever you listen to Pod Friends, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever it might be, and leave those 5 stars. Show that you love the show. Show that you're listening. Tell a friend about it. And if you want to let me know how you feel about the show, things that you have in common with Owen, things you love about the conversation, follow me on X, aka Twitter, at MattScottGW. Follow at Hey Pod Friends on that same platform, and also follow Owen at The Young Knight. One thing I also want to encourage is for you to become an RHAP patron. Support the podcasters, support this community, help it grow, help conversations like this come to life by going to robhiswebsite.com/Patreon and supporting with whatever you can do. That's all I've got for you this week, but I'm just so thrilled for what's coming up in Pod Friends over the next few weeks. Only a few more episodes left in the season. And again, leave a voicemail, speakpipe.com/podfriends, to let us know how you feel. Thanks everyone for being on the journey as always, and thank you for being a Pod Friend.